This episode of Into the Night was made possible by the unwavering support of our dedicated Patreon donors. Their generosity allows us to delve deeper into the mysteries that await us in the dark world of Five Nights at Freddy's. If you're captivated by the secrets we unveil and wish to be part of our journey, we invite you to explore our Patreon page. By becoming a patron, you not only gain exclusive access to bonus content, behind-the-scenes insights, and special perks, but you also play a vital role in sustaining the future of this podcast. Visit the link provided in the description below to learn more and join the Night Conclave. Gregory tore down the fast lane of Roxy Raceway, whooping and hollering as he drifted into a flawless half-circle turn. His wheels kissed the edge of the track, catching a fleeting burst of air as the road dipped and the tires skidded briefly off course. The raceway had always been a riot when crowded, but tonight, devoid of racers, bystanders, or rules, it was his personal playground. Nothing stood between him and the open road but the gas pedal, the wind in his face, and his muted assistant driver miming complaints to him from behind. After his chaotic dance with the cacophony colossus known as DJ Music Man, and successfully restoring power to the Fazcade, Gregory had barely caught his breath before swiftly getting the repair station to work. With electricity surging back into the break room, the staffbot head was quickly secured into the unit for processing. Gray shutters, scorched with pinpricks of residual heat like raindrops baked into glass, obscured his view inside. But from within, he could hear the mechanical symphony begin, precision instruments clicking into place, servos adjusting, and the sharp hiss crack of welding sparks punctuating the air. Then, silence. A brief tense pause before the head slot released with a pneumatic hiss and a sharp alchemical odor that made his eyes sting. But there it was, gleaming, pristine, and even heavier than he remembered. Gregory tucked the refurbished head under his arm, muttering under his breath about forgetting his backpack for the night. He had a Glamrock Freddy pack he snagged with a few fast tickets earlier this year, which was more than roomy enough for the head, or at least all the junk currently dragging his pockets to his knees. Descending the stairwell of the Fazcade with careful steps, Gregory moved as silently as possible, just in case Chica or Monty were still lingering around the arcade. They were still on the hunt, scouring for any signs of him. Luckily, Chica had become preoccupied, stuffing her face hole with a trash bin left suspiciously full, apparently overlooked by a negligent staff bot. As for Monty, well, he seemed to be experiencing some kind of digital existential crisis. Gregory had spotted him half-collapsed in a western alcove, flat on the ground, motionless except for the occasional twitch. The gator's glazed eyes were locked in a single direction, while his voice module muttered a soup of distorted growls and garbled static. All right then. As Gregory exited the stairwell, something else caught his attention. Vibrant strobes and chaotic laser patterns slashed across the walls in no discernible rhythm. The speakers were thundering with bass-heavy music, and perched at the booth was DJ Music Man, fully operational and grooving with unfiltered joy. The towering mechanical arachnid was spinning his web of tunes, bobbing his head in an enthusiastic rhythm. He must have been staring too harshly at the Music Man as he turned his gaze towards Gregory. Gregory reflexively flinched, his flight or fight response running the numbers subconsciously, waiting to see if he should run to the elevator if he makes a move to chase him. But the DJ didn't leave his booth. In fact, He snapped his fingers and shot him with some finger guns before returning back to his musical melody. Even though the same creature had been chasing him moments ago in a frenzy of metallic limbs and crushing intent, Gregory couldn't help but find the sight oddly endearing. Music Man, in his natural environment, looked cute, almost charming. As he made his way back towards Roxy Raceway, he pulled up the Fazbear internal memo server on his Fazwatch, sifting through the usual corporate noise to dig up anything related to DJ Music Man. It didn't take long. He'd done enough searches by now to narrow the filters quickly enough. According to the documentation, Music Man had once been fitted with an experimental bouncer mode, an aggressive subroutine designed to neutralize rowdy guests or any behavior deemed unfitting by Fazbear standards. The feature was later shelved, largely due to warranty concerns and fears of PR blowback, but not entirely purged from the codebase. Apparently, if specific lines of maintenance code were crossed, particularly during arcade repairs, the bouncer mode could still be triggered inadvertently. Had Gregory possessed the correct override clearance, Fazbear Tech Protocol would have instructed him to deactivate Music Man before restoring power to the Fazcade. But of course, those access cards belonged to team leads only. If only he had a MasterCard to get around this place. It's not a half bad idea, he thought to himself. Gregory whipped around another sharp turn, the go-kart's tires screeching as they grazed the edge of the rubber-lined barricade that ringed the track. After successfully reattaching the staff bot's head, with a bit of assistance from Freddy, he asked the gentle animatronic to meet him back at parts and service. Gregory had made up his mind. It was time to decommission Roxy, and he didn't want Freddy to witness it. He suspected the bear already knew what happened with Chica and Monty. Maybe not the specifics, but enough to feel the weight of it. Still, Gregory wasn't ready to snuff out every flicker of plausible deniability. Not yet. Once Freddy exited the stadium, Gregory initiated the raceway system. The loudspeakers roared to life, flooding the arena with synthetic engine roars and thundering music, a symphony of chaos echoing off the walls. He had been going lap after lap, making as loud a ruckus as he could to draw attention to himself. And it finally had paid off. As he banked toward an upward slope, climbed to the second tier of the track, Gregory spotted her, Roxanne Wolf, glowering at him from the observation deck above. Her eyes were locked onto him, sharp and seething. But what made him hesitate, even for a split second, was how disheveled she looked. Black streaks marred her once polished chassis, oil stains and grime smeared across her armor like the aftermath of a factory fire. She looked less like a champion racer, and more like a chim-chiminy sweep as unlucky can be. Before he could make sense of it, Roxy bolted. With feral urgency, she galloped toward the edge of the observation platform, closest to the track. Then, without hesitation, she pounced. The impact of her landing cracked the concrete in a spiderweb of fissures, dust lifting from the floor as her claws dug in to stabilize her three-point stance. As Gregory surged forth the upper track, catching a moment of air, his gaze locked with hers, Roxy stood dead center in his path, unmoving, poised to intercept, either to rip him from the cart or stop it cold with brute force. Exactly what he was hoping for. While Roxy braced herself in a low defensive squat, like a goalie anticipating a penalty shot, Gregory used the airborne momentum of the cart to his advantage. He shifted his weight hard to the side, angling the vehicle mid-flight. The cart tilted unnaturally, sparks erupting as it struck the track at a diagonal. He jerked the wheel in the same direction, doubling down on the momentum. The chassis shuddered and buckled beneath him. Unfastening his restraints in one fluid motion, he launched himself from the driver's seat, planting a foot on the spinning wheel and using the force to kick the cart forward as he leapt free, transforming it, in that split second, from a vehicle into a weaponized projectile. Roxy realized what chaos was barreling down toward her too late. Her eyes went wide as the cart flipped end over end. The staff bot mounted on the front, flailing helplessly like a crashed dummy in a wind tunnel. If she had even a heartbeat more, she might have dodged it. But the front left tire struck her square in the snout with a heavy rubberized thud, snapping her jaw sideways and sending her vision spinning. Her legs collapsed beneath her, and the full mass of the speeding car slammed into her like a battering ram. The resulting impact echoed with a shriek of tortured metal, gears snapping, servos warping, and steel bending under sudden, unrelenting pressure. Her limbs must have snagged something underneath the cart, because rather than being smashed by it once before it continued to skip along the concrete, she was instead dragged along with it. Roxy's face slammed against the pavement, scraping and splintering across the concrete as 300 pounds of machinery ground her down like a rag doll caught in a runaway cart. Gregory hit the track hard, teeth clenched as his shoulder skidded across the concourse. His striped shirt tore where fabric grounded against concrete, fresh scrapes blooming beneath it as his momentum carried him into a rough tumble. He groaned, the new scabs to the tapestry of the bruises and cuts he'd earned throughout the night burning deeply into his skin. But hey, at least he wasn't missing any limbs or frontal lobes. The one blessing he had over the course of this hellish night was, even after everything, he was still himself. Picking himself up from the concrete, Gregory turned toward the ongoing cacophony of screeching metal and froze. The cart hadn't stopped. Its momentum had carried it far beyond where he had anticipated, carving a jagged trail of twisted metal and shattered hard plastic in its wake. It was accelerating somehow, barreling straight into a tunnel beneath the first floor, a shallow, decorative underpass meant to support the upper track. Gregory had assumed the impact might chip the facade, maybe shear off a few pieces of faux stone. Not even close. The cart tore through the tunnel wall like a bullet through drywall. The crash didn't sound mechanical. It sounded violent, brutal. Like a scream being dragged on for too long, it became hoarse. The shriek of steel on steel collided with the cracking of the synthetic rockwork and the grinding of Roxy's already compromised frame. And then, silence. Gregory jogged, cautiously but curious, down to the crater the cart had left behind. Smoke curled from the wreckage. A faint electronic whine buzzed somewhere deep in the debris. And as he leaned forward, peering into the newly carved tunnel breach, he caught sight of what remained of Roxy. Or rather, what was left of Roxy after being hit by a car. This is episode 44, the episode where Roxy gets hit by a car. Into the Night will be right back after these messages. Roxy got hit by a car. The go-kart had finally come to rest after colliding full force with a massive cargo crate embedded into the far wall. The impact had left a deep, caved-in dent. One side of the cart crushed inward, the other pinning Roxy's mangled frame between itself and the unyielding crate. Gregory stepped to the edge and looked down. He could drop into the room easily enough. It was maybe a 6-7 foot drop, but getting back up wasn't going to be as simple. No obvious handholds, no stairs, nothing. His eye scanned the room, taking in the dusty haze and fragmented concrete. Then, salvation. A red exit sign glowed faintly from the far corner, haloed in settling dust. Perfect. Without hesitation, he swung his legs over the edge and dropped down. His shoes crunched against debris and dust as he landed, the fog of pulverized concrete and scorched plastic rising up around his ankles. The air was thick with an acrid stench of diesel and burning phosphorus, laced with hot metal and smoldering rubber. It clung to the back of his throat like smoke. He stepped closer to her. Roxy's body twitched and convulsed, her limbs sparking in protest as some flicker of remaining power sputtered through her circuits. But within seconds, that final jolt died out. Her arms slumped. Her head rolled back. She shut down completely, ungracefully, like a puppet whose strings had finally snapped. Gregory allowed himself the smallest of smirks. He stood over her broken frame, surveying the damage like an artist stepping back from a brutalist sculpture. Her face had been obliterated, most of her muzzle gone, torn open by the blunt force trauma. A gaping, jagged hole sat where the upper plating used to be, and her glassy animatronic eyes now dangled from frayed wires, barely tethered to their original sockets. Her jaw hung loose and crooked, like it had been ripped from the hinges. Sections of her outer casing were missing entirely, revealing the cold steel of the endoskeleton beneath. Her hair, surprisingly realistic still, hadn't fared much better. It was tangled and matted with oil. It was streaked with dust and grime. It was now a ghostly parody of glamour, which was now frayed and filthy. And there, beneath the rear wheel of the cart, was her tail, severed, crumpled, and flattened like roadkill. Well, as Roxy would say, to the victors go the spoils. Gregory crouched beside her, twisted, broken form, and he reached for her eyes, which were still loosely tethered to her ruined face. The task was easier than expected. The earlier impact had already dislodged the ocular mounting. The damage to her endoskull had essentially done most of the work for him. The moment her face made contact with the cart's front wheel, the collision had destroyed the internal framing of her optical sensors. Shards of lens glass and splintered metal lay scattered around her neck like shell casings at a crime scene. Gregory frowned. The cameras that fed her basic vision had clearly taken a beating. But thankfully, it looked like the tech that truly gave Roxy her ability to see things differently was all located within the spheres of her plastic eyes. With a quiet pop, the final connector gave way. He held the eyes in his palm, smooth, cold, and surprisingly light, perfectly spherical. Each one had a small hook at the rear, a mechanical notch designed to latch onto an endoskeleton's ocular rig, like a macabre metal Christmas ornament. Gregory stared at them for a moment, then slipped the eyes into his back pocket, then turned his gaze toward the crimson glow of the room's exit sign. Roughly 3 meters to the right of the crash cart stood a jarring architectural inconsistency. A brick and mortar wall, incongruous with the space around it, marked by a flimsy wooden door. Unlike the sewer tunnels beneath the Pizzaplex, where catacomb-like walkways bore similar materials, these bricks bore no signs of gradual decay or the slow corruption of mildew and rot. Instead, they appeared scorched, blackened not by time but by flame. Smoke-stained and fractured, the mortar between them was riddled with holes from which beams of muted yellow light seeped in like tired memories of the sun. Gregory approached the door with caution. It was visibly deteriorated, ash-streaked and warped from top to bottom. Deep gnaw marks lined the lower half, evidence of starving vermin desperate to chew through anything that resembled sustenance. Where a handle might have once been now was a pale, untouched rectangle of wood, shielded from the fire's reach. Gregory rolled his shoulders and thrust himself against the door. It groaned under the impact, but held fast, far sturdier than it looked. He rammed it again. The boards bowed inward slightly, yet the frame clung tight, unmoved at the edges. Peering closer, Gregory's breath hitched as he noticed streaks of darkened iron, melted and resolidified, sealing the wooden door to the frame like a makeshift weld. He frowned. This wouldn't budge without force. Real force. He would need to find something heavy or sharp enough to break it down.
My face!
As he turned back toward the debris-strewn room to survey his options, just in time, he saw her. The wolf he thought he had dealt with violently shrugged the cart off her battered frame and rise once more, her scarred metallic legs scraping against the floor with unnatural resolve.
My face! Give me back my eyes!
Gregory let out a small, involuntary whimper, and Roxy tilted her head at the sound.
I can still hear you!
Roxy lunged towards Gregory, her legs a blur of blistering motion while her arms flailed in a wild, desperate windmill. In the split second he had, Gregory threw himself to the side, just as Roxy pounced, propelled by the sound of his movement. But her eyes were gone. She couldn't see. Her senses betrayed her, relying solely on the general direction of his breath, his scuffle, his presence. She launched herself with such violent force that her body crashed through the weakened doorframe, bursting it apart in a maelstrom of splintered wood and fractured iron. A spray of jagged debris exploded outward. A dozen tiny shrapnel pieces whistled past Gregory as he shielded his face and mouth with his forearm. Then, out from the ruined frame, Roxy stepped. Her metallic fangs clenched in a snarl, synthetic breathing heavy, rage simmering in every unsteady breath. Gregory didn't wait. He grabbed a sizable shard of wood from the wreckage and hurled it across the room. It struck the side of an empty barrel with a loud, hollow thump. The sound jolted Roxy. She snapped her head toward it, then bolted in his direction with a savage gait, like a starving hyena, lunging for the scent of fresh blood. Wasting no time, Gregory scrambled to his feet and darted into the adjacent room. It was a cramped, dust-choked storage chamber, lined with rusted shelves. Props lay discarded and decaying, draped in webs thick with years of neglect. Mechanical joints sat in pieces, their components oxidized and brittle. And from a single glance, Gregory knew they didn't belong here. These parts were ancient, remnants of an era long past. Outdated servos, corroded ball bearings, cracked spring locks. The room itself seemed to bleed history. The walls were crumbling. Charcoal black bricks had shed their skins in heaps of ash that gathered along the floor like funeral dust. Long, jagged cracks slashed across the stone like black lightning, culminating in craters that bored through the walls, revealing glimpses into unseen spaces beyond. None of them were large enough to crawl through, except one, tucked between two shelves, just wide enough to offer a desperate chance. But Gregory would need to drop to his belly and drag himself through, inch by inch. He glanced back just to see Roxy stepping along the edge of the shattered doorframe, her posture alert, her metal ears stripped of her plastic flesh twitching to every source of audio stimuli. That alone made his next decision an easy one. Gregory dove low, sliding toward the fractured gate between the shelves. The rubble-strewn floor offered him just enough momentum to skid across the loose pebbles and debris, giving him a critical head start through the narrow passage. The jagged ceiling of the hole scraped against his scalp, the stalactite-like edges carving shallow cuts into his skin. But the pain was preferable to the alternative, having his skull crushed beneath Roxy's serrated metal claws. The noise wasn't subtle. Gravel and splinters ground against one another in a grating cacophony. It was enough to let the wolf know her prey was within the room. Roxy began to blindly hurl crates, rusted tools, and collapsed shelving toward the center of the room, desperately trying to flush Gregory out, hoping that the weight alone might silence him permanently. But by then, Gregory had already made it through. He was on his feet now, flashlight raised, sweeping in frantic arcs across the space beyond. His breath caught as Roxy shrieked from behind, her distorted voice echoing with venom and frustration. The room he had entered was different. It looked like the remnants of a foundation site, perhaps once part of the original Pizzaplex infrastructure, before it was hastily abandoned. Massive slabs of cement and rebar formed a makeshift barrier, stacked haphazardly and supported by steel beams that looked barely functional, bowing inward. Nearby, rusting toolkits and broken workbenches sat scattered in quiet witness to a job left incomplete, each one lined against the cracking wall like forgotten soldiers. Gregory wrinkled his nose. The scent of ash and soot still hung thick in the air, but now it was laced with something sharper, something acrid, pungent, and fresh. A biting odor of phosphorus and burning resin, like the early stages of a campfire catching flame. He turned instinctively toward the source. On the far end of the room was another wooden doorframe, warped and melted into its stone casing just like the one before. But this time, a fierce glow pulsed from behind it. A vivid light show of orange and red-yellow flickered through the cracks and edges, casting long shadows like claw marks along the walls. As Gregory stepped closer, he could hear it. The quiet hiss of igniting gas and muffled crackle of fire consuming whatever lay beyond. Gregory flinched at the sudden crash behind him, a deafening rupture as the wall in the previous room burst apart in a haze of black smoke. From the shadowy cloud emerged the jagged silhouette of a mechanical wolf, her limbs clattering forward with a savage, uneven gait.
Where are you?
She charged like a storm of splintered metal, a whirlwind of fractured parts and unrelenting purpose. Gregory's nerves finally caught up with his body, and he jerked aside just in time, moments before Roxy burrowed through the ramshackle door, tearing it from its hinges as her momentum hurled her straight into the inferno beyond. A geyser of flames erupted from the ruined doorway in her wake. Wisps of fire curled outward like reaching tendrils, clinging briefly and desperately to the opposite wall of the room to escape. Gregory, breath shallow and heart racing, stepped cautiously to the threshold. Through the rolling waves of heat and smoke, he glimpsed Roxy, stalking through the blaze, her movements slow and deliberate, sensors no doubt struggling to filter sound from the crackling bedlam around her. The entire chamber was ablaze, walls wreathed in flames, tongues of fire erupting from beneath the gritted floor like the breath of some buried beast. The ceiling above, charred and buckling, caught the embers as they rose, only to scatter them like dying stars into the darkness. Gregory desperately searched for any reason not to have to go in, but the drop he took from Roxy Raceway was too deep for him to climb out of, and his limited options were made even more cruelly clear, with the glint of silver on the far side of the room offering a tantalizing escape. A ventilation shaft, open and wide enough for him to crawl through. He hesitated at the threshold, bile rising in his throat. The fire wasn't accidental. He could tell by the scent alone. The air reeked of a heady blend of diesel, alcohol, and scorched metal. Beneath it all was the bitter tang of gunpowder. This was no mishap. The fire had a purpose. The room wasn't malfunctioning. It was functioning exactly as intended. Roxy stumbled, then hurled a shove in frustration, one that was already half submerged in a vicious pool of glowing orange goo. Below the patches where flames didn't belch through the grated floor, Gregory spotted what appeared to be black insulation pads. If he could trace a path using those pads, he might just make it through the blaze with nothing more than second-degree burns and maybe his clothes still on his back. But first, he needed to get Roxy's attention. He raised the faz cam, angling for a clear shot. Twin beams of light burst forth. As the device whirred to life, its shutter clicking in a heartbeat pulse. As the light faded, however, it was instantly clear Roxy was anything but stunned. She roared and lunged at him. Gregory couldn't get out of the way no matter which direction he chose, so he dove under her lunge, hitting the floor and skidding into the sweltering chamber beyond. He braked hard, stopping inches before his face met the open blast furnace. Scrambling upright, he nearly avoided setting his hair alight. Roxy linked her just out the threshold, still hunting him. He cursed himself under his breath. Of course she didn't flinch. He destroyed her eyes. Why would the flash affect her now? No time to dwell on it. The maneuver had bought him space. If it worked, it wasn't stupid. Gregory pressed forward, weaving a careful path through the inferno, stepping from pad to pad as the heat bore down on him like a living thing. The acrid stench of burning plastic clung to his nose and throat, and sweat surged from every pore in rapid, stinging torrents. It had to be close to 120 degrees in here, maybe more, any longer and he collapsed from heat stroke. Fortunately, the vent shaft was just ahead, but it wouldn't be a quiet escape. Roxy would hear him the second he crawled inside. He reached for the edge of the vent and recoiled with a hiss, a blistering expletive escaping his lips. The metal scorched like a stovetop. The entire shaft had absorbed the room's heat. Crawling through it would shred the skin from his hands and knees. But then again, what choice did he have? He took a few ragged breaths, each one stinging his lungs. The air was thin and infernal, laced with nearly invisible smog that clung to the back of his throat. With no time left to hesitate, Gregory dove into the vent. The blistering heat scorched his knees on contact, but he pressed forward, gritting his teeth and pushing through. Palm over palm, knee over knee, he dragged himself through the narrow shaft, moving as fast as his burning limbs would allow. The pain was excruciating, sharp, searing, relentless. Sweat poured from him in sheets, mingling with the tears that now streamed freely down his face. But gradually, mercifully, the metal's heat began to subside. It didn't vanish entirely, but dulled to something tolerable. And then, just ahead, an open grate. Without hesitation, Gregory threw himself forward, tumbling out of the vent and landing hard on his side. The impact barely registered, His body was already numb from the raw, blistering agony radiating from his scorched hands and knees. He curled in on himself, rocking slightly, every joint screaming, every muscle stiff with strain. His mind swam in a haze of exhaustion and pain. And yet, despite it all, he wore the whitest grin he'd ever had. Maybe he'd finally gone insane. Maybe it was shock. Or maybe it was just the sheer absurdity of how far his reality had shifted. From quiet, normal nights of gaming to this fever dream of fire, fear, and animatronic nightmares. Whatever the reason, he couldn't help it. He smiled through the agony, because the clock was ticking towards 6 a.m. The gates would open soon, and he was going to walk out of here with Freddy. He had done it. Despite the deranged rabbit woman, despite the corporate madness of Fazbear Entertainment, despite everything this cursed place had thrown at him, he would survive. He was going to live. And after everything he'd endured, he would never let anyone hurt him again. Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
Good job. Freddy is all patched up and ready for the big show. You may now exit the protective cylinder.
Gregory managed to navigate his way back to parts and service, and Freddy with relative haste. Before reaching his destination, however, he paused at a nearby first aid station, grateful to find a tin of blister ointment nestled among the sparse medical supplies. He applied a generous layer of the cooling salve to his raw hands and bruised knees. The sting came first, sharp and biting, but soon gave way to a soothing numbness that dulled the ache. He then wrapped his injuries in bandages, just enough to shield the wounds while still allowing for a degree of flexibility in his joints, though every step or clenched fist drew a not-so-silent protest from his muscles. The procedure to install Roxy's eyes into Freddy was astonishingly straightforward, almost insultingly so. The programming had already been preloaded, and all Gregory needed to do was follow the instructions issued by the sterile automated voice-over PA system. With precise movements, he unlatched Freddy's existing ocular sensors and replaced them with Roxy's enhanced set. The process required him to open Freddy's faceplate, a reminder that, despite their bond, Gregory much preferred his companion with his shell on. Fortunately, the exposure was brief, sparing him from the lingering unease that always accompanied seeing Freddy's face hollow and incomplete. After some final adjustments, Freddy's new eyes were fully integrated. Gregory stepped out of the parts and service chamber and terminated the program on the archaic terminal, which released Freddy from his mechanical operating chair. As Freddy left his constraints and walked outside the chamber, the once white glow of his eyes had been replaced by a luminous golden sheen. The amber hue shimmered in the low light, a stark deviation from the crisp white he was used to, or the cobalt blue seen in every piece of Pizzaplex marketing. The more Gregory thought about it, the more it puzzled him. Freddy's eyes had always been blue, so why had they been white tonight? In fact, if he recalls it, they'd been white for a while. It was a detail he hadn't noticed until now, and one he intended to ask Freddy about once they were both finally free from this place. Right now, Freddy didn't appear the least bit concerned. His jaw hung slightly agape as he gazed around the derelict parts service room with something akin to awe. He looked as though as he were admiring a masterpiece, finding wonder in the flickering lights and dusty, rust-stained walls, as they formed the most breathtaking mural he had ever seen.
How are your new eyes?
These eyes are amazing! There are wondrous colors and objects I never knew existed! Nothing can hide from me now!
Freddy turned to Gregory, his jaws snapping shut as a new, curious expression settled across his molded face.
I am having a hard time adjusting. You look different to me. I can see movement through the walls.
Really? I didn't know Roxy could see through
walls.
These
are Roxy's eyes?
Whoops. So it turns out Freddy was actually never aware beforehand that Gregory was decommissioning his friends. That, or Gregory blatantly admitting it to his face, was enough that he couldn't hide from the truth anymore. Regardless, Gregory now had to find a way to soften the blow. Fast.
Well, yeah. There was an accident in the raceway.
Is she okay?
I don't know. Well, nothing seems to stop her.
Freddy considered that for a moment, his mechanical eyes whirring faintly as they adjusted to something unseen. Whatever thoughts stirred behind that glossy exterior, he seemed satisfied. For now. A loud mechanical clunk echoed through the room, and almost instantly, the lights around him dimmed and sputtered out, plunging the chamber into a soft, oppressive gloom. Gregory instinctively checked his FAS watch, a strange mixture of relief and anxiety pooling in his chest. The display read 5:55 a.m. Just 5 minutes until the Pizzaplex reopened and the lockdown protocols would be lifted.
Gregory, good news! It is almost 6 o'clock. You will be safe now if you find an exit. But hurry, the daycare attendant is loose one last time.
Gregory nodded feverishly and quickly launched himself into Freddy's stomach hatch, the familiar click and hiss of the hatch sealing him within. Not that it would do much to shield him from the daycare attendant. The moon had a preternatural knack for discerning Freddy's intentions and showed no hesitation in punishing both man and machine alike when he deemed them being naughty. But at the very least, being concealed within Freddy might offer some protection from the other roaming Glamrocks who still stalk the halls. Once Gregory was snug in Freddy's internal bear pouch, Freddy began his ascent up the cold metal stairwell behind the parts and service chamber. His heavy footfalls echoed through the industrial silence as he made his way across the catwalk toward the elevator that would return him to his green room in Rockstar Row. While Freddy was tanking along, Gregory got a bit curious and looked at his FAS watch. Freddy hyped up Roxy's eyes like an artist who had found the greatest of inspirations, and he was curious to see if it lived up to the expectations brewing in his mind. He tapped a few commands into his FAS watch, shifting the interface to sync with Freddy's ocular sensors. The screen flickered for a moment, and then the world appeared through Freddy's eyes. Gregory gawked at the screen. The world through Roxy's eyes did look different, almost esoterically so. Whereas Freddy's visual interface had always displayed the world through his soft turquoise hue, that tint had now shifted into a deeper, richer violet. His original ocular sensors had included subtle half-circle ridges that framed the periphery of his vision, likely to aid in spatial awareness where his artificial senses couldn't replicate the sensation of touch, smell, or taste. With Roxy's eyes now installed, those same peripheral ridges appeared more dramatic, no longer mere curves, but jagged arcs that exploded outward and flared in spikes. Gregory wasn't entirely sure whether those enhancements had any functional benefit, but it did appear that Freddy's field of view expanded, although it could be just an illusion crafted by the new design. Still, it certainly left an impression. The elevator itself appeared largely unchained, at least in structure. Its walls were the same dull metallic gray, but through Freddy's new eyes, even the mundane was cast in a strange and dazzling new light. The control panel was a symphony of oranges, reds, and radiant golds, each wire beneath its surface, now visible as glowing tendrils, twisting and weaving together in an almost organic lattice. He could see them trailing from the panel and retreating into the wall, extending upward like arteries through a body of the elevator shaft, feeding the control systems nestled high above. And beyond that, past layers of metal and concrete, Gregory saw what Freddy could now perceive even through solid architecture. The faint outlines of arcade cabinets, stage lights, and terminal clusters arranged throughout the green room complex above. Staff bots moved along the floor above them like metallic insects. Thin, awkward frames reduced to a tangled nest of wires and exposed servos. Far above, Freddy's vision caught faint orange outlines, minuscule at this distance, no larger than specks of dust. The smallest signature hovered the highest beside the largest construct, likely four stories up from here. Based on the elevation and surrounding structure, it had to be the Fazcade. The outline of the DJ unmistakable as he continued his party of the dead. And sure enough, lurking in the corner, surrounded by several smaller dots that must have been arcade cabinets, Gregory could just barely make out the broad snout and torso of Montgomery Gator. So, did he just break Monty? Was he stuck or something? Why wasn't he moving around at all? Why was he just there? Regardless, Chica and Roxy were also easy to spot. Their broken-down forms looked just one level above the atrium, presumably trying to catch sight of Gregory as he made his way toward the front entrance. Too bad for them. They wouldn't find a boy running through the lobby. They'd only see their old friend Freddy, calmly stomping down the Pizza Plex's central artery with nothing short of innocence in his stride. The elevator doors parted, Freddy spotting the lift's compartments behind the doors a full second before they even opened. As he stepped inside, Freddy said nothing. He simply looked up. Inside his chest cavity, Gregory was buzzing, mentally spinning through everything they had faced and overcome. They were finally doing it. They were escaping. Escaping the Glamrocks. Escaping the Pizzaplex. Escaping her. Vanessa. He hadn't thought about what she would do after he had escaped. Would she come after him now that he had slipped through her fingers? Probably not. And God knew, Gregory was never setting foot in this neon-drenched toy box from hell ever again. But others would. There would be other children. Others who wouldn't have a Freddy to protect them. Who wouldn't have his instinct to hide, duck, dodge, flash, shoot, crawl and run. Kids who'd vanish like he nearly had. But it wasn't like Fazbear Entertainment could afford to sweep more disappearances under the rug. There had already been too many. Children, guests, even staff, lost or killed during the Pizzaplex's early days. The official causes ranged from hazardous conditions to equipment malfunctions, all neat little labels, all sanitized language to cover the rot beneath. Everything was brushed aside as corporate negligence or the unintended consequences of innovation being pushed ahead without any proper foresight into the question of if Fazbear could do something that they never once stopped to consider if they should. But if another serial killer emerged, if this copycat, or rather copy rabbit, struck again, and if the truth came out that Fazbear's own head of security was the one behind it all, there wouldn't be enough spin doctors in the world to save them. This problem would sort itself out, Gregory told himself. He had done his time in the trenches. He had endured more than any kid should. Whatever came next, whatever reckoning was due, wasn't his to face. He was just a kid, and that's all he wanted to be again. The elevator rose swiftly, humming with a soft mechanical whir as it carried them toward the surface. It opened into the back storage room of Freddy's green room. The same stack of boxes Gregory had used to crawl into the vent system was still piled high, the dents made to the boxes by his weight still present. It almost felt like 2 years had passed since he clambered into that vent at Freddy's direction to unlock the door to his room. Back then, he had no access, no tools, no defense. Now, he had multiple security passes, VIP clearances, and a full array of tech and tools designed to disorient, distract, and disable anything that meant him harm. How time flies. Freddy stepped out into the green room and started toward the guest service hallway, planning to use it as a shortcut to the atrium. But then, a sound stopped him cold. Laughter. Gritty, jagged, and cruel, like sandpaper scraped against a smile. Freddy looked behind him. Overhead, the wireframe outline of the daycare attendant darted across his vision, flying around on his ceiling-mounted wire, swimming through the air with a predatory gleam in his crimson eyes. Freddy didn't wait for Gregory to point out that now was the perfect time to run. With a powerful surge of battery energy rerouted to his legs, Freddy dashed toward the shuttered doorway, top hat scraping the frame as he ducked through and tore down the hallway at full sprint. Every servo motor strained, every piston pumped, and behind them, the moon howled with cackling laughter. Freddy rounded the corner into the atrium. On the first floor, near the main stage, in the security office where he had once saved Gregory from Vanessa's ambush. On the outskirts of the atrium, he could hear the scraping of mangled feet. Roxy. And the glitched out clucks and croaks of Chica's broken voice modulator. Thankfully, neither had noticed anything out of the ordinary. As far as they knew, it was just Freddy. At least, if there was anything left in their corrupted programming to recognize that friendship at all. Roxy was present, but definitely not all herself. He could hear her tearful pleas and whines over her new makeover. But Chica had been reduced to a twitching scavenger, reacting to the near stimuli with a priority hierarchy of food, garbage, then everything else. With the glam rock gals distracted, the path to the final elevator was clear. Freddy didn't have to hesitate at all. He made his way across the floor, stepped inside, and hit the lobby button without a word.
Hey, little man. Do you know what time it is?
Gregory flinched. It was Vanessa, speaking through his Faz watch. Had she always been able to do that? Had she been listening to him and Freddy the whole night? She had to have been. She mentioned that to Freddy when Moon captured him and brought him to parts and service the first time tonight.
The doors are open. Why are you still here? You plan on moving in or you just want a job? Maybe join the internship program. You would make a great security guard.
What was with that voice? That tone. Casual, almost teasing. It was completely off.
Gregory, I think you deserve a reward. Go check the main stage.
Yeah, no, that's bullshit. Gregory and Freddy ignored Vanessa's call as the elevator door sighed into its stop and the door slid open. Nothing, not fear nor doubt, could stop them from walking out of the Pizzaplex. The clock struck 6 a.m. He could feel it, hear it. The low hum of machines rebooting, the rhythmic thrum of servers waking, the flickering of dormant monitors flaring back to life. The Pizzaplex was stirring, rising from its unrestful slumber of this night. At the front entrance, the steel shutters, once locked down tight, were lifting slowly. The dull gray meadow parted to reveal the soft glow of the morning light. Sunrise spilled across the empty parking lot, bathing the concrete in quiet gold. Gregory couldn't contain his excitement any longer. The moment they cleared the ticket turnstile, he leapt from Freddy's chest cavity and sprinted toward the exit, a wide, earnest grin lighting up his face.
Freddy, it's open, let's go! Freddy!
He stopped. The sound of Freddy's heavy mechanical footsteps had slowed, and then faded entirely. Gregory turned. Freddy was still standing there, a silent figure beneath the neon haze. His head bowed, eyes dim and distant, staring down to the ground. Gregory didn't understand. This was their chance. The chance they had been working all night to get to. To leave this place forever. Why was he hesitating?
It's open! Come on! Freddy?
No. I cannot exit this facility.
Of course you can! Come on! We can hide you somewhere!
Freddy finally lifted his gaze. His glowing yellow eyes had dulled, the warm light within them muted. His eyelids, one of the few parts of his synthetic face capable of subtle expression, drooped low with what could only be described as heartbreak.
Without a recharge station, my systems would shut down within an hour. It is a safety precaution. It is my design. This is where I must stay.
Gregory's stomach turned in knots. He didn't want to admit it, but his face had begun to flush with heat, and the sting of salt crept into his eyes. Freddy knelt down to meet him at eye level, placing a hand gently on Gregory's shoulder. Those hands, they weren't his. Not originally. They belonged to Monty once. The same brutal claws that had smashed through iron fencing and swung with savage force, intent on tearing him apart. And yet now, they were steady. Gentle. The dents were still there. The scratches Monty had earned, relics of fury and force, still visible. But when Freddy touched him, it didn't feel like danger. It felt like comfort. Like an older brother, battered by the world, rough around the edges, but doing everything in his power just to make sure Gregory felt safe. Just wanting to see him smile one last time.
Do not return. It will never be safe. I will miss you.
The tears came freely now, sliding down Gregory's cheeks, rosy and warm despite the coldness settling around him. Freddy had been thinking about Vanessa too. Of course he had. Gregory should have known. Freddy was clumsy at times, maybe even too hopeful for his own good, but he wasn't naive. He saw things clearly. This night just made spilling out any lie Fazbear Entertainment programmed into him too hard to regurgitate anymore.
Freddy, if I leave now, nothing will change, will it? There will be more disappearances.
Yes, I am afraid that is correct.
He placed his opposite hand on Gregory's other shoulder. The grip tightened, just slightly. Just enough to feel the weight behind it. He didn't want Gregory to go. Didn't want to be left behind to face what was almost certainly the end. Alone. But he knew. Deep down, he knew. The safest place for Gregory was far from here. Far from the Pizzaplex. Far from Vanessa. Far from the Glamrocks and the Storyteller's corroding influence that lingered like rot beneath the polished facade. More deaths would come. That much was certain. Gregory hadn't considered it, but it was possible that they were the only ones who knew the truth. The only ones who could see through the illusion. The only ones who knew about Vanny. The only ones with the tools to walk freely in this place and fend off any demon that crawled from its corrupted heart.
Gregory, you have a choice to make. The door is open and you can go, or you can continue to investigate the secrets of the Pizzaplex. I feel there is something else going on besides the dancing rabbit lady.
Gregory stared past the rising shutters, the soft hues of a new dawn washing the cracked pavement. A few blue birds could be seen playing in the sky. Freedom was just a few steps away. But Freddy's voice pulled his gaze back. He still had time, an hour, maybe less, before the day staff arrived. And in that hour, what could he accomplish? Could he really make a difference? He knew where Vanessa could be hiding during the day, tucked away in the rafters above Phazerblast. He could confront her, end it, put a stop to whatever twisted plan she had before someone else got hurt. But then, there was the storyteller. That machine was more than just a failed attraction. It was a cancer, infecting every circuit, every protocol, every animatronic in the building. Fazbear might have chopped down the tree, but the roots still ran deep, twisting through the Pizzaplex like veins of rot, leeching order and bleeding chaos. And then there was the sinkhole. Down in Roxy Raceway, something stirred. Something none of the employees could explain. Power was being drawn there, quietly and deliberately, feeding something beneath the surface. And whatever it wasn't benign. Gregory's hands curled into fists, aching in pain from the blisters he had earned. If he stayed, he could only pursue one path. There wasn't enough time to do it all. And even if there was, did he really have the strength to face it alone? Or maybe he should spend that time not chasing killers, but saving the one friend he had found in this nightmare. Maybe he could upgrade Freddy's power supply or find a prototype core, something to help him survive beyond the Pizzaplex, beyond Fazbear Entertainment. Doing nothing was a choice too, and one he couldn't afford to make. The question wasn't whether he should act. It was how. What would you do with a single hour if you had the chance to change your world?
Hey, superstars! It's me, Freddy! Welcome to the Mega Pizzaplex! Grab a jumbo slice of pepperoni and top it off with an ice-cold fizzy faz! Then enjoy our super games and attractions! Don't forget to stop by Rockstar Row and meet me in person! Have fun and have a fazerific day!
Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, marks the conclusion of Security Breach. But not the conclusion of our journey here. This is merely the penultimate episode. Many questions still remain unanswered, obscured by the shadow of implication and half-truths. Gregory's past, for instance, remains deeply enigmatic. There are hints, subtle but persistent, that his history is intertwined with the mimic somehow,
if he, like Vanessa, was subjected to a similar mind jack, then how precisely did he manage to escape it? Then we must turn our attention to the mimic itself. The storyteller program could still linger in the infrastructure of the Pizzaplex. Can something so fundamentally woven into the fabric of that place truly be eradicated? Or is it merely dormant, biding its time? And what of Freddy? He is different. Markedly so. There's something anomalous about him. Something that sets him apart from the other animatronics. But what is it exactly? And why? Is this truly where the story ends? No. Not yet. Security Breach does offer us multiple endings, each one pulling back the curtain ever so slightly, revealing fractured glimpses of the narrative. Which ending is canon? Well, we have a strong suspicion, but even the most correct conclusion seems to leave us with more ambiguity than clarity. In fact, no ending of this game is actually supported wholeheartedly by future installments in the series, making every conclusion more of a what-if scenario than anything else. Next time, we'll walk through each of those endings, dissect them, and attempt to construct a coherent picture as we close out this Security Breach audiobook series. But for now, let's delve into some of the lingering mysteries that continue to haunt the ruins of the Pizzaplex. Let's begin with those disappearances that Gregory was talking about during our heroic duo's uncertain farewell. While playing Security Breach normally, this line, truthfully, comes out of nowhere. Unlike our audiobook production, where we have included things like the story of GGY in the Mimic, which fleshes out the backstory surrounding the Pizzaplex, these important details were not implemented into the actual game, all except for one instance. Remember how Vanessa tempted Gregory to return back to the stage for a reward? Well, if you go back to the stage instead of leaving, you will find nothing. Like, legit nothing at all. I would argue that the intent of this line wasn't supposed to be a trap by her to get you to waste time and get caught by the daycare attendant. However, Security Breach's development was a bit scuffed to say the least. In reality, what was likely supposed to happen during this part of the game was a reveal that you could collect various CDs scattered around the map as an incentive for the players to stick around the Pizzaplex instead of leaving when they could. These CDs can only be discovered by Freddy when he gains Roxy's eye upgrade. For reasons unknown, these CDs can't be seen by the naked eye, but can be discovered through Roxy's augmented vision. There are 16 CDs in total scattered around the Pizzaplex for Gregory to collect. However, you don't gain knowledge on what's on them simply by collecting them. You need something to play the CDs. If your first thought was perhaps either the DJ Music Man stage or the Glam Rock Performance Control area where Gregory installed the hologram projection, then boy howdy, you have played better games than Security Breach. In reality, the only way to play these CDs is to find an audio recorder and playback. To Security Breach's credit, there actually is a decent hint on where to find the recorder, as a piece of torn paper gives a cryptic clue that, quote, the end of the dark hallway hides the key. This dark hallway turns out to be the backstage area Gregory was lurking around in the beginning of the game, specifically, the one in which Monty bashed down a gate to begin chasing Gregory. If the player decides to take Gregory back to that hallway once they've collected both Freddy's upgraded claws and the Fazcam, Gregory may use the Fazcam on the hallway to reveal a hidden doorway. And I mean that literally. By activating the Fazcam and shooting out two dual cones of light, they will reveal a hidden wooden doorway that will open esoterically and reveal a small room. When you walk into this room, the trained Five Nights at Freddy's mind will immediately start making connections. most notably the presence of an armchair sitting in front of a box television with a familiar-looking lamp and clock in the shape of a sun, with a basket of delicious-looking exotic butters perched on top of the television. This room is a replica of Michael Afton's living room from Sister Location, down to the wallpaper and the bucket of popcorn spilled on the floor. This is already strange enough, and we will be discussing this further in a moment, but if you were to explore this room further, you will find two more points of interest. The first will be a strange collection of symbols that look like hieroglyphics on one of the walls. These symbols match the description of the coded language that David Murray and the Mimic used to communicate with each other with back in the 70s, and furthermore, the coded language David's father Edwin used to communicate to the storyteller before the events of Security Breach. Similar to the implications of Michael's room being present in here, we will save what this could mean for a moment. The final point of interest in the room is in the back corner, opposite of the television setup. There, a brown table where another bucket of popcorn rests, right beneath a poster of Phaser Blast, also hangs on the wall an audio recorder. It is here that Gregory can take the CDs he collected and insert them into it and play back what was recorded. And what do we discover? Well, you've already heard some of these tapes already in GGY, as these CDs include the audio of Gregory's talk with his multiple school therapists that went missing. What was concealed from that episode was that those therapists were also seeing a second patient, one more talkative than Gregory, Officer Vanessa. Don't ask me how or why it makes sense that a school counselor also doubles as a corporate therapist for Fazbear Entertainment, but it is from these tapes that we can conclude a few things that we already suspected. First, Gregory was infected by the Glitch Trap virus. Somehow, someway, the entity that was inside Vanessa's mind, or at the very least a similar incorporeal creature, burrowed its way into Gregory and turned him into a reluctant follower, similar to Vanessa. This explains how in GGY, Gregory was able to be so proficient in hacking and technology, despite being so young. While he may be smart in his own right with tech, he was getting a boost to his intellect from the parasite that had taken over his mind. Beside that confirmation, however, the rest of the tapes only corroborate what the tale stories elaborate on. The therapist for Gregory and Vanessa went missing because they potentially knew too much, and there are deaths surrounding the Pizzaplex that are being covered up by Fazbear Entertainment, these deaths being quite detailed in the tale series, where multiple incidents, most notably issues regarding their VR technology, and a few instances of their robots misbehaving, has resulted in numerous deaths surrounding the Pizzaplex. While not confirmed in either games or books, we do know from the storyteller that the Pizzaplex is bleeding cash, with no positive return on investment. That, alongside the aforementioned deaths, which we do see have caused issues in Fazbear's publicity, in a few messages discovered around the Pizzaplex, indicates that Fazbear isn't doing too well, and are only surviving by cutting corners where they can, hence the addition of the staff bots to replace labor and service jobs, despite them being quite accident-prone, unintuitive, and not well-received by the general public. And to be fair, I quite agree with you. I mean, the moment that McDonald's starts serving me burgers that a robot has made, listen, I already know the food is fake, but when you're telling me a robot can replicate this food, I know that ain't real. Still, Fazbear Entertainment covering up these deaths, including those surrounding Vanessa and Gregory, do put a pause for thought. Do the board of directors know that Mr. Burroughs is dead? Or is the storyteller potentially playing the part of Burroughs whilst keeping his rotting corpse hidden away? We know from Fazbear HR that Vanessa was recommended for the position of head of security, despite her lack of credentials, and that recommendation came from the top. So unless there is someone higher up helping them pull the strings, Perhaps this storyteller is much more prevalent in orchestrating the chaos surrounding the Pizzaplex than we previously had asserted. Into the Night will be right back after these messages. Next, let's discuss what was under Roxy Raceway. As Gregory learns, late into the night, Roxy Raceway has an issue foundationally. The employees originally cited the issue being a potential sinkhole, and while that is partially true, the actual result was there was some underlying construction going on that was drawing power from Roxy's deep below ground. If Gregory chooses to stick around the Pizzaplex after hours, he can go further and investigate this apparent structural issue once he has every upgrade for Freddy acquired. By looking around Roxy Raceway, Gregory can uncover the elevator shaft the employee had mentioned that his team discovered. The elevator is old, and Freddy even mentions he worries it might only survive one round trip, but Gregory can go deeper if he desires. Doing so, Gregory and Freddy will shortly find themselves in a cavernous hoard of rubble and metal debris. By weaving around a pathway of stalactites, passing by an overly large Freddy Fazbear head crushed into the wall, Gregory will quickly come across a lone building deep below ground, its red neon signage still lit up and casting a cherry red luminescence across the dank space, spelling out in glowing words, Freddy Fazbear's Pizza Place. The location of Five Nights at Freddy's 6, Freddy Fazbear's Pizzeria Simulator, is rotting beneath the Pizzaplex. This has been hinted at for some time on this show, with our Help Wanted episodes concluding with the arrival of a certain endoskeleton that begins to tear apart limb from limb. Employees of Fazbear Entertainment were building a skeleton of the Pizzaplex around Freddy Fazbear's Pizza Place, using the old building as the foundation for a new museum of the franchise's past glory days, before getting abandoned after this robot slaughtered at least a dozen crew members. This event, as portrayed throughout the Tales from the Pizzaplex series, known as the Mimic Epilogue Stingers, revealed that the culprit behind these deaths was none other than the eponymous Mimic, still active and still corrupted by the agony from Edwin's abuse toward it over 50 years ago. After this tragedy, which I shall now go on to call the Second Mimic Massacre, Fazbear Entertainment covered up the building's doors, windows, and any foreseeable exit with cement, and locked the Mimic inside, letting the place go to rot. The location, whether through natural causes, agony corrupting the surrounding area causing it to fall through, or the actions of Fazbear Entertainment or another, Freddy Fazbear's Pizza Place fell through the surface and found its way down here. If Gregory were to go inside it, he would find the dining hall show stage and familiar surroundings of the FNAF 6 location when Michael is working as a manager making adjustments to the pizzeria before opening hours. With the only addition, besides the excess of grime, rats, and musk, being a large hole just in front of where the kitchens are located, it is recommended, if you choose to investigate further, you hop into Freddy's chest cavity, as something will quickly grab onto Gregory if he goes further below alone. For resting right atop the very labyrinthian network of vents where the scrap animatronics would have been skulking around, chasing after the artificial cries of children to satiate their bloodlust, lurked a large mass of wires and tube-like tendrils. These tendrils varied in size, from the microscopic, used for smaller mechanisms, to serpentine appendages that would rival a basilisk. Emerging from several openings of this mound of molten metal, the carcasses of animatronics of old. Chica, Bonnie, the Mangle, Circus Baby,
and even the puppet. Their parts welded together, with wires and tendrils slurping and weaving away from the empty eye sockets and agape mouths. The most dominant of these characters being the head of this creature, asleep and breathing deep bellows of rust, was the head of a white bear with pink glowing pupils and a black top hat. The head of Funtime Freddy. This creature, which goes by several names in the community, ranging from the Tangle, the Blob, and the Amalgamation, appears to be the remains of what used to be Molten Freddy. Bizarrely enough, it appears to have survived the fire from FNAF 6, but not without sacrifice. While only theoretical, what used to be Funtime Freddy, whom was already losing what little remained of his sanity by the time of FFPS, appears to have lost all semblance of human rationale, the bulk of parts he must have added onto himself to both repair his body and tether whatever esoteric strings kept him grounded in this world, alongside the added isolation of being confided deep below ground again, but now with not even fellow prisoners to share your cell with, has resulted in what was left of Funtime Freddy into becoming an animal running on instinct alone. But is he truly the only survivor? Once the amalgamation is in sight, Glamrock Freddy will begin talking about his surroundings and how familiar they are to him.
I know what this is. I have been here before. She brought me here. I found myself for the first time when I cleared the path. I did not want to, but I had no choice. Now I have a choice. I have changed. My friends are here. They are so angry, confused. But I can protect you. I am not me.
It's time to ask the major question. Why is Freddy so different? Throughout this entire storyline, the mystery of why Freddy was protecting Gregory has been swelling up to this breaking point. The answers regarding simple solutions, such as Freddy had started up in safe mode at the beginning of the night, does not account for his earlier malfunction that caused the Pizzaplex to shut its doors early. Nor does the answer to Freddy seemingly protecting Gregory from his suspicious friend Tony in GGY, when Freddy begins to stalk and even at one point approach Tony, when he begins to uncover that something is amiss in the Pizzaplex with this supposed arcade prodigy. After all, Gregory apparently has little knowledge of why Freddy is different, and Freddy doesn't even recognize Gregory when they first meet. This would lead to the credence that Freddy was acting more so on the side of the glitch trap virus, or as we now know it to be thanks to both Help Wanted Novella and Tales Corroborating, the Mimic's influence, rather than specifically Gregory. So what is wrong with Freddy? Why is he different? Well, let us return to our earlier mystery surrounding that strange room where Gregory can listen to the CDs he acquires. Michael Afton's room being present in the Pizzaplex is almost as random of an addition as you can make. That is, until you realize the Pizzaplex is residing right above the ruins of Freddy Fazbear's Pizza Place, and what is in effect the tomb of Michael Afton as he too succumbed to the cleansing fires of the labyrinth. But what of that strange collection of symbols on the wall? Can we decipher those? As a matter of fact, we can. Codebreakers, far more intelligent than I were able to be,
created a system that was able to decipher the mimic's lexicon, and as such, were able to reveal the message as follows. Quote, "Break and mend, I build the breath. They hunt now, drawn to life. Not real, still keen, and frit and fraught, with thought and zest and jest, no blunt woes. Dodge, duck, flash, shoot, crawl, run, crush the vile band. Cry not, try not, do not hold out, hope not. Your life, your aim, will save those with soul." The later half of the message is clear. These are instructions for anyone wishing to stop the mimic, to do what Gregory has done throughout this journey. Dodge, duck, flash, shoot, crawl, run, and crushing the vile band, sometimes literally. But who is speaking these instructions? Well, the only one we know to have an understanding of the mimic's language who could have been around was Edwin Murray. And seeing as how he indicated he built the breath, i.e. gave life to these creations, but their life is not like yours or mine. As he specifies, it's not real, but it is drawn to life and is keen enough to hunt and acquire more. These are the last words of Edwin Murray. His lingering commands to those who would wish to stop the machine, he accidentally forged with both his sweat and then his tears. But why are these words in Michael's room? Well, as Edwin stated, if one is able to stop the mimic, they can save those with soul. Freddy, with his speech about finding himself for the first time down below the Pizzaplex, ordered to clear path downwards by her, likely talking about Vanny, and his final statement that, "I am not me," would heavily imply, in my opinion, that Freddy is more than just a machine. He is possessed. But beyond being possessed by simply remnant or agony, he is possessed by someone. And what do we find in the corner of Michael's room? The one thing besides Edwin's word of encouragement to stop the mimic? A poster of Phaser Blast. I submit, Michael Afton is still here. Like his sister before him, he has possessed a machine and lost sight of what he once was. But he remembers now, and even without his mind fully on the wheel, his soul still tempered the machine he resides in. The nature to protect the innocent, especially a boy with messy brown hair, dark eyes, and a striped shirt. History never repeats itself, but like poetry, it does rhyme. Only this time, Michael was the older brother he should have been. And that is where we will wrap up tonight's episode of Into the Night. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to stay updated, please consider subscribing, following, or sharing this podcast. It truly helps us broaden our reach. Consider following us on our Twitter at Fazbear Podcast, joining our Discord, or supporting us on our Patreon or merch store using the various links in the description of this episode. This series is inspired by the world of Five Nights at Freddy's Security Breach, developed by Steelwool Studios and Scott Cawthon. Script written by Nick Black. Original game performances: Gregory, Roxanne Wolf, and Vanny by Marta Savetic. Glamrock Freddy and the Daycare Attendant, performed by Killing Gaw. Dread Unit, performed by Andy Field. Vanessa and Glamrock Chica, performed by Heather Masters. Montgomery Gator, performed by Cameron Miller. Audiobook performances, narration, Abe and Preston, by Nick Black. Dread Unit additional dialogue, by That One Boyo. Sebastian, by Melty. Fazbear HR, by Scott Kelsey. Tate, by Braden Buck. Help Wanted Short Story Performances, Steve Snodgrass, performed by Jackson Goyette. Brock Edwards and DJ Dan, by Nick Black. Victoria, by Doll VA. Avery and Abigail, by Alexa Joy Bell. And Mr. Hurlbutt, performed by my father. Mimic in the Storyteller Short Story Performances. Edwin Murray, by Nick Black. Mr. Burrows, by JD Voices. David Murray, by Cat the Cat. Dominic, by Alistair Atlas. Glynn, by Jay Saking 11. Harry, performed by Zero PC. Team A Leader, performed by Thistle. Sebastian, by Melty. Older Fazbear Worker, by Matthew M. Younger Fazbear Worker, by That One Boyo. Dale the Accountant, by Avix the Wolf. And Fazbear Board Members, by my mother and my father. Artwork. Thumbnail art by They Underscore Incorporated. Thumbnail edits by Nick Black. Music and sound design. Original theme, Into the Noir, composed by Cloud Radio Music. Sound effects and additional music sourced from Five Nights at Freddy's by Scott Cawthon and Leon Riskin. Security Breach by Steelwolf Studios, Freesound.org, Pond5.com, and Pixabay.com. A special thank you to our Patreon members, Alex Scheimzik, Autumn Green, Avix the Wolf, Bookworm 16, Brain AFK, Bun and Hun, Elijah Leandra, Jacob Fossum, James, Lex Grant, Leon Barrett, Levi Smith, Luna Bruce, Miudo, Parker Satterfield, Red Eagle 15, Sadie Boone, That One Boyo, 30 Odd 6, Uranium is Tasty, Vesper Online, Victoria Davis, and Xanthus Lothbrook. A heartfelt thank you to Avix the Wolf, Sans, That One Boyo, Victoria Davis, and Xanthus Lothbrook for being incredible friends and some of the most beautiful people I have been fortunate to meet through this project. Extra thanks to Songstress, King, Fetus Deletus, Pingu, Mighty Penguin, JP Grass, Red Dragon, and Mick Bejerged for being absolutely awesome listeners. And finally, to my parents, thank you for believing in me and always supporting my creative endeavors. This audiobook series is dedicated to my young nephews and niece. I hope to be able to craft my own stories that inspire, entertain, and transport you all, whether through real-life adventures or journeys into the wondrous and the macabre, for decades to come. And of course, to you, the listeners, thank you for your time, your support, and your curiosity. You are the reason I create. I have been your host, Nick Black, and thank you for listening. Have a good night, and drive home safe.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.